number three, which is Gordon versus Veneman. Judge Bauer, in this case, you'll have the pleasure of hearing two lawyers who come from a beautiful city 95 miles north of Chicago.
I'm overwhelmed.
What would that be?
Ms. Hackbarth.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, my name is Lynn Hackbarth, and I represent the appellant, Henry Gordon. Very briefly, the procedural history is as follows. On April 17th of 1998, Mr. Gordon filed a federal suit in the Eastern District of Wisconsin, alleging both claims of discrimination as well as retaliation. Approximately a year and a half later, the defendant, appellee, filed the first summary judgment motion. On March 30th of 2001, the magistrate entered an order dismissing plaintiff's claims regarding discrimination, which were based on sexual, racial, and disability claims. The retaliation claim remained, with the magistrate stating that the defendant had not addressed it in its motion for summary judgment. The defendant then brought a motion pursuant to Federal Rule of Civil Procedure 60 sub B sub 6, asking the court to allow them to file another summary judgment motion addressing the retaliation claim. Over the plaintiff's objection, the magistrate allowed that to occur, and the motion, in fact, was filed. Interestingly to note, I think, is that as part of the defendant appellee's second motion for summary judgment, the defendant specifically argued that it was not clear that there was a retaliatory motive for the actions of the plant workers and the supervisors against the appellant, and that the motives could have been racially or sexually motivated. The court granted the defendant's second motion for summary judgment on February 27, 2002, and we are hereby appealing, Your Honors. Three issues have been raised by Mr. Gordon in his brief, and very briefly I'd like to summarize. The first issue is that the second summary judgment motion should not have been allowed to be filed pursuant to Rule 60B. The standard under Rule 60B, as the court is well familiar, is that the court would grant relief upon such terms as are just. Under this case, it is the plaintiff appellant's position that there are no just terms here in allowing defendants to once again revisit the issue of summary judgment on plaintiff's claims. The matter pended for approximately 2 years, Your Honors, prior to the first summary judgment motion being filed, and then that motion pended for approximately 18 months prior to decision. The first motion, as noted by the magistrate, never even addressed the retaliation claim, nor was the word retaliation ever mentioned in that motion. Therefore, it's plaintiff's contention that the attack on the retaliation claim should have been considered abandoned. Also, I think it's interesting to note that while the first summary judgment motion was pending and prior to decision, no supplemental motion was filed at any time by defendant, although there was an excess of 2.5 years time span during that period of time. The second issue that the appellant would like addressed is that the second summary judgment motion, was improperly granted. It is our position, Your Honor,
that's the important issue here,
right,
isn't it?
That is very important.
I don't understand the idea that the judge can't take a second look at a case. That's essentially what you're saying.
That is, Your Honor. But really, I think that you are hitting on the meat of the issue, which is whether or not it was appropriate for the second summary judgment motion, in fact, to be granted. And it is the appellant's position that there were still jury questions or questions of fact which needed to be answered and could not, therefore, be disposed of under the summary judgment procedure. I think that if we look at the fact as presented,
yeah, if the judge had agreed with you on that, you wouldn't care that they considered
right.
a second.
Exactly.
Motion a second time.
Exactly. First of all, I think that one of the jury questions that still remained was whether or not activity Mr. Gordon suffered was in response to the EEO complaints that he had filed commencing back in 1992 and 94. In fact, the facts support that many of the same people involved at both places of his employment, both Peck and Maple Leaf Farms, were the same. The question is whether or not it would have been retaliation versus, as the defendant had raised, whether or not it was based on racial or sexual motivations. The other issue that I think is important to look at, and which also I think would support the fact that summary judgment was inappropriately granted, is that when we look at whether or not the conduct was ratcheted up, which is brought up by defendant also. In the brief of plaintiff, we clearly outlined the conduct that he experienced at both workplaces chronologically, and I think it's very clear that the conduct did in fact ratchet up to ultimately a point where Mr. Gordon in fact was fired from his employment. I don't think that anyone can say that there is anything worse that an employee can suffer but being asked to leave his place of employ, which in fact Mr. Gordon was. I didn't quite understand. I didn't quite hear that.
Judge Williams, could you try that again?
Similarly situated individuals, Mr. Gordon, in fact, was the only black meat inspector that was assigned at both Peck and at Maple Leaf.
So your position would be you wouldn't have to meet that, correct?
Correct. And then finally, in regards to the inappropriateness of the granting of the summary judgment motion, I think that if the court looks at the case of Sarja versus Sears, whether people were motivated by the EEO complaints or some other motivation goes to the intent and credibility of the witnesses, and in fact, intent and credibility remains a jury question. Finally, Your Honor, it is our position in summing up that the defendant should have been stopped from arguing that there were possible racial, sexual, or handicap-based discriminatory practices because, in fact, in the first motion for summary judgment, they argued that there were not any. And to look at the theories of judicial estoppel and direct estoppel, which would govern this situation, the defendant, in fact, would have been stopped from reasserting a claim which he had litigated, the contra of which, in the first summary judgment motion. Thank you for your consideration.
Mr. Johnson.
Yes, Your Honor. My name is Mel Johnson. I'm an assistant U.S. attorney, and I represent the Secretary of Agriculture in this case. First of all, I'd like to briefly state that the trial court did not abuse its discretion in allowing the second summary judgment motion. There is no legal bar to a second summary judgment motion in a civil case. The plaintiff cites none. Rule 56B says that a defending party may move for summary judgment at any time. And there's a wealth of case law, including cases from this court, or at least one case from this court, allowing successive summary judgment motions within the court's discretion. And the rationale for that is clear. It's foolish to disallow a second summary judgment motion and insist on going forward to a trial when the court can find that the plaintiff can't win that trial because the plaintiff's allegations, even if true, do not sufficiently support his cause of action. That's the situation we had here. It was a reasonable exercise of the magistrate judge's discretion to allow the second summary judgment motion, and in fact, it would have been an abuse of discretion to have disallowed the second summary judgment motion and insisted on going forward to a trial under these circumstances.
Why would that be an abuse of discretion?
Because there's no point in having a trial.
First of all, we would never have to consider that issue.
Well, that's true. On the other hand, while it might be better for this court and might simplify an appeal, the parties, the court below, and the witnesses would have been dragged through a trial as to which the plaintiff had no potential to win because his allegations, even if true, did not sufficiently support his cause of action.
Well, I'm just troubled by that last statement. That I think a district judge ought to be able to say this is the date for dispositive motions. You file a summary judgment motion, it's resolved, and then you come back later on and you want to file another one. The court, I don't think, would abuse its discretion by saying I'm not going to consider anymore.
Well, I guess I don't need to insist on that position.
No, you don't.
So
then why are you doing it?
Well, because it's a way of stating the strength of the position.
What you're really saying is you don't want to be put to the bother of a trial.
Well, under these circumstances, no.
Yeah, well, you can take that position, but you can't say it's an abuse of discretion for him to force you to trial.
So. Fair enough. In any event, there was no error in granting the summary judgment motion on the plaintiff's retaliation claim. because the plaintiff's allegations did not establish a prima facie case. Well, I don't think that's necessarily relevant to the retaliation claim, Your Honor. That would be relevant to other claims of discrimination which had already been dismissed, but here, it's an overstatement rather to say it's not relevant. On the other hand, I would say it may not be necessary. To prove retaliation, the plaintiff was required to prove several things, and two of them were, first of all, that he suffered what the case law calls an adverse employment action, and second, that adverse employment action was caused by his statutorily protected activity of making complaints of employment discrimination. Magistrate Judge Gorenz found that the plaintiff's allegations, even if true, failed to establish both of those elements of a retaliation claim. That failure to establish either or both of those elements was fatal. Therefore, she dismissed the case, and there was a sound basis for her findings as to both of those elements. First of all, to maintain an employment discrimination action, a plaintiff has to establish that he suffered some adverse employment action. Now, an adverse employment action, as interpreted by the case law, cannot be a minor, unpleasant, or irritating experience like many people experience at work all the time. It has to be a tangible, substantial change in their job status. Various examples have been found in the case law, including decisions from this court, examples like being fired, being demoted, losing pay, losing title, losing responsibilities, some tangible, substantial changes in your job status. The setbacks which the plaintiff alleges do not establish adverse employment actions and fall far short of them. He cites things like he had to call in for sick leave. He was criticized for being late to work one day in a snowstorm. He refers to other instances in which there was animosity between he and various other people with whom he worked, some of whom were not even USDA employees. He refers to other examples where he was criticized by supervisors or colleagues in a way that he considered unfair. But none of those allegations allege any tangible, substantial employment actions which were taken against him, and that's the end of the case. Now, in her reply brief and also today in oral argument, Ms. Hackbarth has stated that all of this culminated in Mr. Gordon losing his job. And I guess the implication is that's certainly an adverse employment action. But that's really not correct under the record. The record reflects that there was a proposal made to remove Mr. Gordon from his job. He filed an MSPB action over that proposal. A settlement was eventually reached between Mr. Gordon and the USDA, and that settlement was based on the party's agreement that Mr. Gordon was no longer physically able to perform the job. As part of the settlement, he applied for and received disability retirement, and Mr. Gordon to this day is still on disability retirement. So it is not accurate to say that these various hassles and criticism and animosity between Mr. Gordon and his supervisors culminated in the loss of his job. Now, the other fatal flaw that Magistrate Judge Gorenz found in the retaliation claim had to do with causation. To maintain a retaliation claim, a plaintiff has to establish that employment actions taken against him were the result of statutorily protected activity in the form of making complaints about discrimination. Again, the plaintiff's allegations, even if true, do not adequately establish that here because, as Magistrate Judge Gorenz found, there was no increase in the quality or quantity of the problems that Mr. Gordon encountered at work. According to Mr. Gordon, he had already been harassed badly for years in his work. Before he made any EEO complaints, he alleges that he was threatened with a rifle. He alleges that cockroaches were put in his duffel bag, that water was repeatedly put into his boots, that an employee of one of the meatpacking plants punched him, another employee threw an S-hook at him. And after he began to make discrimination complaints, He refers to additional harassment, but it was in the nature of arguments, insults, embarrassment, an incident in which he got a rash on his neck. There's no basis for any juror to reasonably find that there had been an increase, or as the case law says, a ratcheting up of the discrimination he suffered, and as a result, that element of a retaliation claim failed as well. The plaintiff continues to insist, well, these were points that should have been left to a jury. But that argument misses the point. There's no reason to present this to a jury when the plaintiff's version of the events, even if true, fails to adequately support his cause of action. Unless there are further questions, I've completed my argument.
Thank you, Mr. Jennings.
Thank you.
Is that present? Anything more?
Just very briefly, Your Honor.
There was a comment made by Mr. Johnson that there was a proposal made to remove Mr. Gordon from his service, and ultimately there was a settlement that was reached. I think the word proposal to remove is a very nice way of saying he was asked to leave, he was fired, and it was only through extensive negotiations that we were able to craft an agreement with the government to allow Mr. Gordon to continue to have some form of income to support himself and his family. I have nothing else really I need to address, Your Honor.
Thank you, Ms. Hackbarth. This case will be taken under advisement. We move on.